From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1982. We'll see how long it takes you to figure out where this music comes from. It is, of course, the flying theme from the movie E.T., The Extraterrestrial. John Williams' iconic score is coming to Rochester, because now we have the full season lineup for the 2017-2018 Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra. It's a diverse lineup for the Pops, for the Philharmonic, from E.T., yes, to Beethoven, Vivaldi, Tchaikovsky, Mahler, Strauss, and more. A lot of movies and music. We're always fascinated to learn how the Philharmonic, how the Pops, they pick out their selections. Yes, they're aiming to bring in a wide-ranging audience of all ages and backgrounds, but how do they make the final calls? There is so much they could do, and you can't do it all. So I'm thrilled to welcome back to the program Ward Stair, music director for the RPO. Welcome back.
Evan, how are you? Always nice to see you.
Always great to have you. And Jeff Tyza, great to have you as well. Principal Pops Conductor for the RPO. Welcome back to the program.
Good to be here.
And our friend Randy Gorbin is interrupting for just a brief minute, the news director for WXXI.
Just another example, Evan, just what a powerhouse duo here today in the arts and cultural world here in Rochester.
I'm sort of oddly, like they're going to laugh, but it's one of the rare times I actually get intimidated as a host.
I mean, right, but again, you know, we talk about needing support during Pledge Week, but and this wasn't, you know, planned this way necessarily, but it just worked out that way to have two people who are not only been on your show before, and certainly we've covered them in talking about arts stories here in the Rochester area, but on Classical 91.5 as well. They've appeared often both musically and in terms of interviews. And this is the kind of support that we talk about. When we talk about programming and the great people that you hear on a regular basis, we hope if you enjoy what you hear today, if you enjoy listening to the RPO on Classical or here talking about it on WXXI on AM 1370 and 88.5, please make a contribution. We only have until, 6 o'clock tonight, Evan?
This is it.
454-6300. And I want to mention that this 2 hours coming up here, we have a dollar-for-dollar match from the Donald and Maxine Davison Foundation, so you double your contribution. 454-6300, toll-free 1-800-295-9994. That's 1-800-295-9994. Or you can make a nice, secure, at your own convenience donation at WXXINews.org.
Did you see E.T. in theaters, Randy Gorbin?
I am old enough to have... Actually, I met him. No, actually, yes, I did. Yes. I'm that old. Yes. No, actually, I did see. I made a pile of mashed potatoes and when I got home. And,
No. Hold on a second.
What?
You're doing Close Encounters of the
right.
Third Kind.
Oh, wrong movie.
Yeah,
you're right. Oops.
And sorry. I don't think they came prepared with music from Close
you're
Encounters.
You're right. I did see
E.T.
Although that's a great score, too.
Yeah, it is.
Who did that score, by the way?
John Williams.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I knew
that's
that.
That's why I got it confused.
Okay,
come
so
on.
It's still John Williams.
Absolutely.
Give me an
excuse.
Okay.
I did see it, though.
Yes. I was going to ask you if you cried. You don't even know the film I'm talking about. Get out of here.
Okay.
Thank you, Randy Gorbin, okay. News director. Yeah, we started with E.T. and, you know, Jeff Tyzik, Ward Stair, you know, movies and music kind of go together. I'm always interested to see how much interest and, like, the communities across the country. You see it in San Francisco. You see it in a lot of different cities. You're seeing more movies and music, aren't we?
Absolutely. I mean, it's been it's a very... I don't want to say trendy because it's been around for about 10 years, but more and more films are now available to be performed with a live orchestra, which is really cool. And what they do is they actually just take out the musical score and leave all the sound effects, all the dialogue, everything exactly as you expect to hear it. But the score is played live by the orchestra, and it's really, I don't care how good your sound system is at home, mm-hmm. There's nothing like hearing it with a live orchestra.
It's true. And what people may not realize is that 95 years ago, or actually more than 95 years ago, George Eastman built Eastman Theater as a film house. It was not a music house. And what became the RPO was an orchestra that sat in front of the screen and played for silent film 8 times a week throughout the year. And, you know, Buster Keaton films, Charlie Chaplin films, Harold Lloyd films, they all came through. So that's how the RPO actually started. When talkies came in and Eastman sort of fell out of favor, then he did leave some money for the orchestra to continue, but with the caveat that it had to become self-sustainable at some point. And then it turned into a music hall. So acoustically, the theater, as good as it is, it wasn't that great for a long time because the configuration of it is not right for a concert hall. So that's what the recent renovations took care of by adding the boxes, bringing some of the walls in, sort of condensing the hall down. But here we are 95 years later, playing for film again.
See, and that's such an important point because I was kind of thinking the exact same thing that Ward kind of touched on. It feels still newish, but really what it really is a throwback.
Absolutely.
To how you experience film. And I am such a novice with this stuff, but I mean, is it difficult to pull the music out of films? I mean, I guess they do it. It can't be that hard, right?
Well, technologically, I can't speak to how that, yeah, that process happens.
Everything is on its own track.
Okay, right? Yeah, I mean, that's the key.
It's not like
that's
there's bleed. You know, you have your music, you got your sound effects, you got the bicycle, you got the gunshot, whatever it is, and then you got the dialogue. They mix all that stuff together. So you just pull it out. You can pull the music track out. The difficulty is syncing, playing live to the film. And there are varying degrees of technology that either make that very easy or very difficult. I mean, when I did a couple of years ago, people might remember, we did Fantasia. It was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And Ward has also done it, and we kind of talked about it. We've done it in different ways. But I'm going with all these, you know, there's these little spots, and there's streamers, and there's punches, and all these things. And Stokowski, when they chose his pieces, there was no click or anything. They just took his music and the guys cut all of the cartoons, you know, Sorcerer's Apprentice or whatever, to the music, the way he conducted it. Well, when you do that, you've got to conduct it the way he conducts it or the hits don't work.
Right.
And it's a nightmare. So it's really difficult to do it for some things.
I can tell you a couple of funny stories about that. The first film that I ever conducted was Blue Planet. It's George Fenton's score. It's great. I did that in St. Louis when I was resident conductor, and I remember there was this one moment like halfway through, and there's this beautiful phrase, you know, that Fenton wrote, and I just loved it, and my instincts were to stretch it a little bit and let the orchestra enjoy it. And there was this big blue whale that breached the water in the film at that moment and came up in the air, and you had to coordinate this chord change with the splash, and I just thought, no matter how much I tried to will it to happen, that whale would not wait to splash down, and I had to rush through this phrase against all my musical instincts. So that was my first one, and I've done a lot of films since then, and actually the hardest one I've ever done is The Wizard of Oz, because that, back in 1939 when they were doing a lot of that, especially the Munchkins music, the way they had to compress it, they recorded it like way lower and slower with, you know, deep male voices, and then just sped it up a lot of it, you know, to get that Munchkin sound effect, because, you know, things were not as advanced as they are today. And because of that crude compression process, the tempo is not even or steady at all during all the scenes with the Munchkins. And so as you're conducting along, you have to jump in weird, awkward moments to keep the music with the film. And in a film that's so iconic like that, you know, if anything's off, people know it right away. So there's a lot of pressure on the conductor.
So we sold out Raiders of the Lost Ark the past year. So we decided, as you said, where do these ideas come from? How do you go forward? So we decided, you know, this is a medium that is around to stay for a while. So next year we're doing not only E.T., but the entire Harry Potter film series, all eight films, is now going to be available for orchestras to play live. And it's going to happen over a number of seasons, but we're also doing one of those next year. And one of the things I've been an advocate for and we're really trying to do is to make it family friendly, in the sense that we want to start these evenings at 7 o'clock or 7:30 instead of 8 o'clock, so that at the end of the night you're not carrying, you know, Johnny on your shoulder. He's still actually able to walk out of the theater and be awake, you know?
Absolutely. Well, and I just want to mention to our listeners, as we go through the conversation this hour with Ward and Jeff, we're not kind of going in order here. I mean, I picked E.T. to start. That's January 12th and 13th, 2018. I mean, kind of in the middle of their season. So you can get the list of the season and check out what's coming up. RPO.org, it's a piece of cake, and it's all there for you. I'm just kind of bouncing around and I'm going to let them help direct it. We'll have some fun here. So that's one of them. Again, on Harry Potter, how many Harry Potter? What's the plan with Harry Potter?
Well, there's eight films.
Yeah.
So over maybe six seasons or something, we're going to probably do all eight films.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to make it a series. And again, we want to try to make it earlier in the evening so that, you know, I hate it at the end of a night when you have sort of a family concert. You look at 10 o'clock, as I'm going to my car, I see all these adults carrying these kids sleeping on their shoulder, you know. So we're going to try to make it earlier, those concerts.
Fun. And other films on the list this year?
Well, just E.T. and Harry Potter.
Okay.
I mean, that's going to be two of the nine pops. So we're making a commitment there.
Yeah, absolutely. Ward, do you want to say something there?
Well, I was going to say it's not a film per se, but it's another example of using the screen and imagery to enhance the concert. I'm really excited about this concert, and even though I'm not actually conducting it, it's a guest conductor, but one of our Phil's concerts next season will feature HD images from NASA of planets in the solar system to accompany Holst's The Planets, which is a great piece of music performed by the orchestra. And this, I mean, it's such a cool concept. It's such an amazing thing. We're joined by great guest conductor. He's the former music director of the Houston Symphony, so there's a nice Houston-NASA connection there. And he actually was part of the project when it was originally conceived, so it's great to have him. Hans Graf is his name. And that's going to be just an amazing experience to hear that score, because for those of you who may not know, Holst wrote a piece called The Planets, which had a musical description of each one of the planets that existed at the time.
Mars, Jupiter, right?
Right, right.
I think those are some of the clips we have, because I remember hearing this morning, Julia warned me, Mars and Jupiter are quite different.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah.
I think Mars is the god of war.
God of war.
What am I hearing now here, John?
Yes.
This is Mars? All right, very...
this is Jupiter.
Oh, this is, of course, this is Jupiter. It's a little happier. And this is from the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, by the way. So, Ward, you want to tell us a little bit more as we listen a little bit more of Jupiter?
Well, it's, I mean, it's one of those iconic pieces in the repertoire. It's written for a large orchestra. The variety, you know, from planet to planet, you get the really, you know, Neptune the Mystic, which is very sort of, you know, slow and dark and mysterious. You get Mars, the bringer of war, which is very aggressive and very powerful. Jupiter, you know, the bringer of jollity, which is, you know, sort of happy, more effusive. Saturn, I mean, it's just, it's an amazing experience you go through in a little under an hour sonically, and then to have this visual element added on top of it, it's just going to be a fantastic show. And going along with the Holst Planets, we have Ligeti's Atmospheres, which is just a perfect pairing, and Scriabin's Poem of Ecstasy, which is one of my all-time favorite pieces. Scriabin is a very sort of a mystic Russian composer, and it just fit perfectly. Logistically speaking, because the orchestra is a similar size, but also thematically speaking with the mysteries and wonders of the solar system.
Want to hit a little bit of Mars here if we can? Let's listen to...
Yeah, let's hit it.
Check the contrast here.
Ooh, that's quick.
Not only that, but in Star Wars, there's elements of Mars that John Williams was influenced by that you'll hear in Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Elements of Mars in the Imperial or
no the main theme of,
the,
of
the
Star
theme.
Wars. Yeah, dun, 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 dun. You know, he does this. He
right.
He pays respect to the composer.
Well, so there's an example of some of the contrast there, and we can listen a little bit more. We've got a lot of music. We'll have a lot of music to get through this hour. I do already have some questions from listeners. If you want to jump in with Ward Stair and Jeff Tysick this hour, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're talking about the RPO's 2017-2018 season, and you can see the details at rpo.org. Before we kind of get into more of the specifics, I want to ask both of you about putting together a single evening's program. The other night, went to see Shostakovich 5, and it was a fabulous night. I mean, obviously, for someone like me, you know, a novice, someone who knows almost nothing about the classical scene but loves it, Shostakovich 5 was the draw. But you paired it with a debut piece called Pravda, which was the 7-minute perfect appetizer to the night. And then you did, Scheherazade.
Yeah.
Not Rimsky-Korsakov. Ravel's
yes,
Scheherazade.
That's right.
Which was beautiful. And I want to ask, I'll start with Ward, because I'm referencing a night that where, you know, you were at the helm there, Ward, but I want to hear from both of you. You know, it's easy to grab something that the public may be a little more familiar with as a headlining piece. How do you shape out an evening and feel like these are the pieces that blend together?
Well, you know, it's not to use a too often made comparison or analogy, but it's a little like putting a meal together. I mean, you want things that are going to complement your main dish and enhance the listener, as in parallel the, you know, diner, I guess, enhance their enjoyment of the main piece. So, I mean, the program you mentioned is a perfect example. The Pravda, which ended up just being the perfect opener, had little tastes and little references to the larger subject matter which is dealt with in the Shostakovich Symphony, but it was still upbeat enough that it's not like all this in your face at once, so it's not too much to absorb right away. It sort of gets you in the right mood. And then the Ravel, the reason I chose the Ravel is because... you know, it's much more, it was much more about the fantasy of, you know, just wonder and more innocent fantasy rather than, you know, the fantasy of life not under a brutal dictatorship.
The fantasy of not having yourself crushed.
Yeah. Right. But you know, the heart, the heart and the soul, you know, is has to be nourished in different ways in a particular evening in a concert experience, I think. So you want things that are very different. The Ravel is also much more subtle, much more nuanced than, say, the Shostakovich, although there are moments of great delicacy and intimacy in the Shostakovich, but it's more of an in-your-face kind of piece, whereas the Ravel is much more an impressionist painting, and I think those two things work well together. And having a world premiere, having a brand new piece is always nice, because what my goal is at the end of the day is give the audience something that they're at least somewhat familiar with, so that they go in with, you know, some common ground. Give them something, you know, that they're completely unfamiliar with, so it's new, a taste of something new, and then, you know, give them something that's sort of in between so that they have a complete experience by the time they leave.
Mm-hmm. Jeff?
I agree with the Ward. It's kind of like putting a menu together. The first thing with me is nothing goes on stage that I don't really like. That's number one. I have to really believe in it. So my issues are when I'm creating a concept for something that's never been done before, like my Tango Caliente show or Night at the Cotton Club or Let's Dance, those kind of shows. On a show like Let's Dance, I want to have a mix of music, so the audience comes in, and of course they're going to hear music of the 1950s, but they're also going to hear Blue Danube and see, you know, ballroom dancing to that, and they're going to hear, you know, the song from some of the early musicals, but they're also going to get the Bacchanal from Samson and Delilah on the same concert. And so people who don't necessarily go to the classical concerts are getting some of the War Horses and going, wow, that's such a great piece. And, you know, on a concert like Night at the Cotton Club, I go back and research and say, well, what was going on in the Cotton Club in 1928, you know, with Chick Webb, with Duke Ellington, with Cab Calloway? And then I start to formulate, what is the orchestra going to look like on stage? Let's set up the orchestra like the band would have looked like at the Cotton Club. Let's get the greatest tap dancer of our day, Ted Lewis Levy, you know, and then try to create an experience. So when you walk in, I don't say, hey, welcome to, you know, the Eastman Theater. It's like, welcome to the Cotton Club.
I was there. It was incredible.
Yeah. So.
Incredible.
These are things that, you know, take a lot of thought, and then on my part, because you can't always go to a wall of existing things, I have to create the arrangements and work it out. So it's not an easy process, but I really take a lot of time doing it. I mean, we're going to do a concert at the end of the season this year called Women Rock. And Women Rock is not just a title about women who are in rock and roll. There's a concept, Women Rock, if you get what I'm saying here, you know, the strength of women and the power. And women have been overlooked in pop music, really. When you think of Carole King and all of her songwriting, you know, and Holly Knight, and you think of Janis Joplin and Aretha Franklin and Tina Turner. So we're going to highlight those people. And I'm actually putting that concert together right now and picking out all these great songs. And it's so, again, develop these concepts. And like I said, nothing gets on stage unless I really like it.
All right. So I'm going to sound kind of like a operatic, to use a term, or a sycophant, but I don't care. The night at the Cotton Club, for example, I feel like I'm there with you. Right. I mean, it just fantastic, Jeff. I just have loved it. But I want to mine a little territory that you brought up here, because I'm really curious, and this is going to get really pedantic, and again, I don't care. It's Friday. It's been a long week, so let's just do it. you mentioned, you know, you're not going to put it out there if you don't like it.
Right.
But I'm going to use wine as an example, because I've written a lot about wine, and I've had a chance to talk to people who rate and critique wine. A friend of mine who writes for Wine Spectator says, if there's a wine that I don't particularly like, but I can appreciate the construction of it, it's going to get a good score for me. There's another critic named John Gilman who can't stand big, bombastic, New World-styled Bordeaux, and he kills it in critical ratings. He'll give Pavé 52 points. Instead of saying, you know, it's not for me style-wise, but it's still well-made. He says, nope, that's not how it should be. I don't like it. It's getting a terrible score. Which camp are you in when it comes to music? Because you say you're not going to put it out there if you don't like it. But are there times where you think, you know, this isn't my favorite, but I appreciate how well done this is? Or are you thinking, if I'm not having fun with it, we're not doing it?
There are only two kinds of music in the world, according to Duke Ellington. Good and bad. And the good music can be in any genre. It can be in rap, it can be in country, it can be in rock and roll, it can be in jazz and classical. You know, there are some classical pieces that are not really good. Okay? And if you have a choice between the ones that aren't good and other ones that are great, I mean, what are you going to choose?
You know I'm going to say name names now, Tyson.
So I'm not naming names, but what I'm saying is there's such a wealth of great music in every genre. So why not just pick the great music? You know, I think Blue Suede Shoes is a great tune. It is. But there's other music of that genre that, I mean, yeah, that era that I really don't like, you know? I think Bill Haley and the Comets were amazing. Although every tune they did was a blues, you know, a couple of them are really good. So I'll use them. So I'm not poo-pooing, you know, just like a style of music. But within the style, it's got to be great music.
Okay.
Well, and I think also another part of that, and I agree with everything Jeff just said, and it's funny because I use that Ellington quote a lot myself because I absolutely believe it. But for me, I imagine it's probably the same for Jeff to a certain degree, but, you know, when I'm looking at the Phil's series, you know, I'm considering music, you know, spanning, I don't know, 400 or 500 years in some cases. And, you know, that's a lot of styles. That's a lot of different, you know, things to consider. And so sometimes, like, I'll like a piece, but I know that it's not necessarily in my wheelhouse. It's not my repertoire. And a good example that I just thought of was The Messiah. I like The Messiah very much. It's not that I have anything against it, but as a conductor, I mean, if I were asked to guest conduct it somewhere, I would decline politely, not because I don't like the piece, because I don't work in that style particularly well. I'm not comfortable in it. I'm not well schooled in it, because it requires a different focus, you know, in the sound concept and even the manner of playing. And there are specialists who do that, and people who do it extraordinarily well. And so this season, when we were planning the current season, now we're back to this, I was, you know, I wanted Messiah on the season, but I knew that I wasn't the right person to conduct it. So, but I had seen Christopher Warren Green do it in St. Louis, and he did a magnificent job. And so I told our artistic administrator, I want Messiah on the season, and I want you to go for Christopher Warren Green. And luckily, we were able to get him to come and perform it here. It was a huge success, and I was really glad that he was able to do it. But you'll probably never see me conduct Messiah. I mean, never say never, but, you know, okay. It's just not, it's a piece that I really admire, but it's not for me personally to conduct.
All right. Before I grab Natalie and Rochester on the phone, only because we're on the subject and you're both going to decline, but I will ask you, what's the most overrated piece that you're probably not going to see RPO perform? This is so unfair. This is so unfair. It's awful. It's a terrible question. Your whole board is listening to this going, don't answer. Do not answer this question.
You know, I don't really want to slam him, but, you know, I mean, Wynton wrote a piece for his band and the New York Philharmonic. I can't remember what the name of it was. It was like, it took 3 years to get the commission done.
Was it the All Rise or the,
City
Swing Symphony?
Yeah, something.
He's had a couple new ones that have come out.
And it was interesting because, like, the band, when they played, it was, like, unbelievable. And the orchestra, when they played, you know, there were some interesting things there, but the piece did not really work like when you married it together, the band and the mm-hmm. orchestra. It was very kind of disparate sections, and I was hopeful for that, because, man, what a great, you know, thing. If I was ever asked again to conduct a Philharmonic, you know, I'm thinking jazz at the Philharmonic, wouldn't that be a great thing? But that piece kind of missed for me, so I, you know.
Okay.
Sorry. and I love Wynton. I think he's one of the most amazing people in the world.
Absolutely.
But, you know, and believe me, I've got a lot of dogs in my repertoire that I've written that didn't quite work either. So.
And Ward can't remember the question, right?
So what were we talking about?
Neither one of these guys are coming back here. So it's the final appearance of Ward Sarah and Jeff Tysik on Connections. Let me grab Natalie on the phone in Rochester. Go ahead, Natalie.
Hi. I just want to say, first of all, Evan, I love your show,
and I listen to
you every Friday. I love the wide range of subjects, and I want to thank you for promoting the RPO a while back. That's how I learned about this season in September, and I was so excited to hear Beethoven 7th, and my husband and I went to see the RPO, and kudos to all of you. It was a wonderful, wonderful performance, and it was incredible to hear the national anthem done by an orchestra, not a military orchestra, but a, you know, orchestra, and it was wonderful. We had a great time, and you guys really just knocked it right out of the park. I mean, it was such an aerobic piece, and we chatted with some musicians on the way out, and I just loved it, and thank you for doing a great job, and that's all I have to say. Thanks so much, guys.
Natalie,
well, thank you. Natalie.
Thank you very much, Natalie. Cool stuff. I'm sure you hear that all the time, pretty cool, isn't it?
Well, it's always nice to know that you're reaching the community and the audience in the way that you hope you are. So thank you, Natalie.
No more totally unfair questions for Jeff Tysick and Ward Stair. We're going to get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back and listen to a little bit more of the music that you can expect in the coming season. RPO.org for the 2017-2018 calendar. Having great fun with two Rochester icons who have really put us on the map here when it comes to music. And Natalie's not alone in how we feel about it. So we're thrilled to have them, and we'll come right back with Jeff and Ward. Coming up in our second hour, you'll have a chance to hear President Donald Trump alongside Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe live. They'll make some comments, and NPR national coverage will bring that to you. And when they're done, we've got a conversation about the Seneca white deer. You might know the story of the Seneca white deer. A couple hundred deer, not albino, living where the old Seneca Army depot was on the east side of Seneca Lake. What's their future? We'll tell you about the latest. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. A brief hello from our news director, Randy Gorbin. Hi, Randy.
Hi, Evan. Great show so far. Great hearing both Jeff Tysick and Ward Stair today. And again, just the coverage of the arts programming on both WXXI and AM and 91.5 FM with the classical station. I think just even if I wasn't working here, I would say it was really phenomenal. I just love hearing talking about these various segments on your show on a regular basis, but hearing from the people that are actually making the music. It's just a great perspective. We do need your help to continue this kind of programming. It does cost money to put on these shows, Connections, our news programming. We have a very robust news department, and to support all of the activities here, we're asking, this is the last day of donations that we're asking for. The number is 454-6300. 454-6300. You can do it online if you like, wxxinews.org. Want to mention a brief programming note. I know you will as well, Evan, but talking about the coverage, we've been trying to cover all of the goings-on in Washington. There have been a lot of them, to say the least, but President Donald Trump and the Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe will be holding a joint news conference at 1, so that's going to be in the middle of your show. We will come back after that news conference is over. We're assuming it's probably not going to be the entire hour, but we will have that for you coming up straight up at 1 o'clock. So again, arts, cultural, news programming, it's all part of Connections, and we hope people will support that.
And Kat, by the way, on Twitter, Randy, is asking, when is the next Connections Live at the Little Theater? She wants to get tickets. I think we're going to do May, right?
We're doing, I think this is, I'm supposed to say it or not, but I think we have a tentative date of May
31st. Oh, shoot, did I just get us in trouble?
Well, it doesn't matter, whatever.
I should check with you.
It's going to happen.
I didn't know this, now yeah. I'm in trouble.
End of May, and we are talking about that, and it's going to be, Karen DeWitt will be our Albany correspondent, will be part of the program, talk about state government. Karen's always very popular there. And we'll have more details as the weeks progress.
Oh, you got it. So, Kat, there's your answer. But I hope you're a sustaining member already. That might get you in the door. We'll see.
Go.
Randy, thank you. Want to get a couple of listener comments as well here, and I'm going to grab another phone call. Tom in Pittsford next on the phone. Go ahead, Tom.
This is the centennial year for the first jazz recordings. You know about that, I'm sure.
Yeah, the Dixieland, original Dixieland band. Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
Are you doing anything with that?
Well, we're going to be having a jazz celebration opening up the pop season. So we are paying homage to jazz with a tribute to Ella Fitzgerald with the great, incredible Carmen Bradford, who sang with the Basie Band. And by the way, this is kind of a little intimate story, but when Ella Fitzgerald passed on, you know, her family came back to her home to deal with her effects, and they went to her CD player, and the CD in her player was Carmen Bradford. So we're doing a tribute to jazz with a nod to that. We're featuring Joe Locke, Rochester native, one of the best vibe players in the world who's never performed with the RPO before. We're going to be doing some vintage jazz from the 1920s, some Jelly Roll Morton. So I'm with you on that.
Yeah, you're not doing the original Dixieland Jazz Band since that is not considered great jazz, right?
I didn't say it's not considered great jazz. You said that. No, I think it is great jazz. I've listened to some of those tracks. I think they're amazing, and I want to do them, but it's not, you know, it's not in our schedule right now. But I just did listen to it a few months ago because, interesting thing, we have this group coming, the Hot Sardines, a young group plays early jazz, and we have three Eastman students who are for the first time writing arrangements to be played for the RPO in that concert. And our original idea was to do music of the original Dixieland Jazz Band, but it didn't quite work for that concert. But it's on my mind, so thanks for bringing it up.
Mike on Twitter says, living in London in the 1980s, I rode with the Barnes Bridge Club next to the Hulse home. The boombox practice music? Mars, of course.
So love it. Love it.
That's from Mike. Love that. Matt says on Twitter, I tuned in late but wanted you to know that I loved Mozart's Requiem last weekend. It was to die for. Very nice.
Thank you very much.
Here's a question from, let's see here. I'm sorry, let me back up and make sure we get this in for Monica. Monica says, long-standing question. Please ask your guests the difference between philharmonic and symphony orchestras.
There isn't.
Yeah, I've had that question a few times. It's a little confusing. It's basically just the name. I mean, some orchestras are called the blank orchestra, the blank philharmonic, the blank symphony. There was a time when some people liked to say it was a size thing, but these days it's just the tradition.
Well, one of the things goes back to is actually the time of Haydn,
right,
when people formed what they called a philharmonic society. And after that time period, certain organizations started to use that moniker. Hey, Evan, do you mind if I make just a quick public service announcement?
Sure.
Yeah. First of all, Jill and I have been a member of this station since, I think, 1980. I mean, it's been a long time. And I really believe in what you do. And I believe in the RPO, and I believe in Jiva, and I believe in the Memorial Art Gallery, and Push, and Garth Fagan, all these great groups we have here and what they bring to Rochester. And this week, Ward and I was fortunate enough to be on our preview concert, and at the reception afterwards, a gentleman came up to me who was the head of one of our major medical centers in town and said, I want you to know something about how important the orchestra is. He said, I was trying to recruit these really important doctors to come to Rochester, and they came for a visit, and I took them to the RPO, and it happened to be one of our holiday concerts. And he said they sat there, they had a young daughter, and they sat there and they cried through the concert. They watched the Festival High School Chorale, and 2 weeks later they decided to come to Rochester. So it's the value for the people who live here, but also to bring people to our city. The arts and culture are so important, and I want to thank XXI for just doing such a great job and really give kudos to all of our great organizations. It really makes it a great place to live.
That is a great story. That's a really great story. And, you know, Ward's an example of somebody who came back.
Absolutely. And, you know, all the success that I have enjoyed in my career can be traced back to my, my formative days here in Rochester and growing up in a city which was so rich and still is so rich and vibrant culturally. And to be back now on the other side of that and giving back to the community is a thrill and it's a great honor.
Well, let me back to the phones and Dave next up. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I recently bid on and won 2 RPO tickets. And I was very excited to get my hands on them because I've heard nothing but wonderful things about the RPO, and I've always wanted to experience it. But I'm not well-versed in classical music, and frankly, I don't have a lot of time to invest in learning a lot about it. And I was wondering if your panelists could recommend a show for me to see in this season that would allow me to enjoy myself and learn a little bit about the music, but mostly just relax and enjoy. And I'll just take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Dave. Great question.
Yeah, so. We have plenty to offer, and there's nothing wrong, by the way, with coming down if you don't feel like you're really well versed in classical music and what we do. We aim to make every program balanced so that you can enjoy it no matter what. We also for the Phils, we have pre-concert lectures that if you want to hear a little bit more detail about each piece, that can help enhance your listening experience. But I'm trying to think, Jeff, did anything come to mind for you?
Well, one of the things I wanted to say, I'm glad you mentioned a pre-concert, and it's not really a lecture, it's a chat.
Right.
And it's so much fun because the conductor, and most of the time that'll be Ward, will kind of get into the pieces and explain sort of, you know, what was intended by the composer. And then you have a chance to sort of absorb that, and then when you listen to the performance, you know, it may make sense, it may not, it doesn't matter. We just love that you want to come, hear a great orchestra in a great theater. It's not pretentious, there's not a ton of rules. You know, you want to come, be relaxed, and just have a beautiful evening. And any concert you pick is going to be great. I can't recommend a specific.
Yeah, I was just thinking off the top of my head, you know, coming up fairly soon. I think it's the first weekend in March. We're doing Brahms' First Symphony, which is an amazing piece. And we have a great pianist in Ingrid Fleeter who's joining us for Chopin, which is beautiful music. And there's a new piece by Bright Cheng, which is very cool, very short. So that'll probably be a great program for you to come check out. You
Ka-ching,
know, some Brahms,
that's your
some,
concert.
Some Chopin.
Take that
and, yeah,
one.
Do it. Do it. It'll be great.
Or you can go with a classic that I know comes up a lot. But Dave, if you've never seen it live, you can always go see this.
Yeah, that's true.
It's hard to argue with that.
Have to wait a year for that, but
That's on the calendar, though.
Right.
So two weeks of Beethoven. Go ahead, Jeff.
I think his tickets are for this season. So.
Right. Oh right. Man! Yeah. See,
but
how
I like the
ahead?
Segue. Now we can talk about Beethoven on yes. the 17-18 season. That's good.
So, if you can apply those tickets and you can wait. Now they're doing this coming November, starting with November 9th, and then over a couple of weeks, 2 weeks of Beethoven, including what you're hearing here, the 9th. And I think this is one of those concerts that I've seen the RPO do it the last time they did it pre-Ward, which was probably 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. I want to go back when Ward's there because I want to hear the storytelling. I think Jeff's right. When you get to go there before the show, about an hour before the show, and just sit there and hang and listen to a chat about the music, you get such a better expectation of what's coming. Not that it gives away the store, but it gives you the context to go, oh, man. When I remember when we saw Beethoven's, what's the happy one, the fourth? We would just do the fourth, you did Haydn.
Yeah, the happy one.
I'm sorry. Beethoven's fourth,
yes,
and the night you did Haydn as well.
Season.
And you even gave us a little tip to say right when the thing is crashing to an ending, and then you pause, and you get this little oboe, mm-hmm. and you get the, and it's almost his cheeky way of winking at the audience, and I still remember that.
Oh,
because
great.
Of the pre-chat. So Dave, if you get a chance and there is a pre-chat, definitely go to the pre-chat, and then I'd love to hear what Ward would say about the ninth. So tell us about the ninth and why you wanted to do the ninth here.
Well, it's, you know, it's one of those pieces that's just, it was groundbreaking at the time. It's been a fixture in the repertoire ever since because it's got this universal appeal. I mean, it's really a journey. The first three movements are very different from the last movement, which is the Ode to Joy, the famous, you know, with the Schiller poem. And, you know, it was a completely novel, really cutting-edge idea to even include voices in a symphony in the first place. And Beethoven wrote for four solo voices and a huge choir. And the text, you know, everyone, it talks about brotherhood, bringing people together. You know, this Ode to Joy is a very universal thing, which unfortunately has been timely, you know, throughout pretty much every period in our history ever since it was written in 1825. And, you know, it's Beethoven at the height of all his powers, and it's sort of like his parting message to the world, and it just resonates with people, and it's a piece that orchestras love to play because it's got challenges, and it's very rewarding for us, and it's great for our audiences as well.
It's hard to get inside Beethoven's head. We talked to you. You talked, and we talked on this program about the fourth in the past, about how it's, you know, the joke, the happy one between the third and the fifth. I don't know if it was Beethoven going, "Oh, you want me to be happy? Here's what happy sounds like." You know, maybe it was. The ninth to me is really fascinating because by then, his disability was so much more profound. He was, I think the ninth was like 1824 or 5, and he was dead within several years of that.
He died in 1827, and it was 1825, and he was, he had about 10% hearing in one of his ears and none in the other, so he was pretty much stone deaf.
And how do you, how do you feel about, you know, just the general feeling of, especially the final movement there, it seems to go against what we would assume a curmudgeon who is... You know, Rossini famously said that when he went to visit Beethoven at home, he left in tears. The man was living in squalor. He thinks there's no way somebody this great should be living like this. And he felt sad about it. And yet here comes the Ode to Joy. I mean, it seems like there's some dissonance there.
Well, Beethoven is kind of, he's one of the quintessential, you know, suffering artists that we've had, you know, in history. I mean, he went through a lot personally. He, you know, suffered as a child. You know, he had difficult relationships through all his early adult years. He never found a partner, never married, never had any romantic attachments of note except for the infamous Immortal Beloved letter, which adds to the mystery. Then he started to lose his hearing, which I mean, can you imagine being a composer and a musician and losing that one thing which is so important to your livelihood? But in the face of all that, he was somehow able to struggle through and be one of the... I mean, he almost single-handedly opened the door to the Romantic era in classical music, which is extraordinary. He took what Mozart and Haydn did and just blew the doors off and said, no, we're going in a new direction. The possibilities are endless. And, you know, he was also one of the first composers in his own lifetime to kind of be a celebrity and also financially successful, because Mozart was paid well but didn't manage it well. Haydn was, you know, at the beck and call of the nobility. Beethoven was sort of a free agent. He would say no to people. He would say, you know, no, I'm Beethoven. I don't care who you are. You're a prince, but there are a lot of princes in Europe. There's only one Beethoven. I mean, just this whole thing that goes into that's one of my favorite stories. You know, he was walking with Goethe, I think, and they stopped in this spa, you know, and Goethe bowed before a prince who was walking by, and Beethoven kept walking, and he caught up with him and said, what are you doing? Are you crazy? And he said, there are many princes in Europe, but there's only one Beethoven.
Now, is that apocryphal, or do we think that really happened?
I think it happened.
I want to believe it happened. Real quick, because it's 2 weeks of Beethoven, so it's not just the ninth. You're choosing to open with Piano Concerto number 5. There's so much in the repertoire, and I think sometimes we get so focused on the symphonies that all of these amazing works are out there that don't often get performed, or at least not nearly as much. Why did you choose that one?
Well, yeah, and Beethoven was a pianist himself, and you know, he wrote fantastic piano concertos. But the fifth, it's subtitled, or you know, called the Emperor Concerto, and it's a wonderful piece. Audiences love it. It's an opportunity to bring back Olga Kern, who's one of my favorite guest artists. She was with us at the end of last season playing Rachmaninoff, and you know, I wanted the Emperor and the Ode to Joy in this little 2 week festival, because they're both due in our, you know, sort of rotation for Beethoven, and they're very different pieces, you know, different periods in his career, his life, but you know, very, very beautiful, very, you know, you'll thoroughly enjoy both of the pieces. And I should also say, paired with the Emperor Concerto is a slightly different twist on Pictures at an Exhibition, because it's not just the Mussorgsky Ravel. We've put together, or actually I should say, I didn't put it together. I stole it from Leonard Slatkin, but he willingly gave it to me. And we're going to do several different composers' realizations of the different movements along the way of the pictures. It's a really cool program, and I'm very excited about it. So it's going to give all of our, you know, musicologist friends a little extra interest in that concert.
Tom writes to the program and says, Evan, I'm a newcomer to RPO, saw the Bugs Bunny at the symphony last month, and I'm hooked. I relived my childhood, and we're attending the February 18th Romantic Classics Concert. So that's from Tom.
Fantastic.
Already hooked on RPO. Thank you, Tom. And I'm starting to feel that panic looking at the clock going, oh my gosh, the hour is almost up with Jeff Tysik and Ward Stair. I want to remind you, we're not really going in order of the 2017-2018 season. We're kind of bouncing around having fun with what they've got planned, but you can see the full calendars. Pops, Holidays, Philharmonic, or Kidstra, which is great. RPO.org to find that. Jeff, what else is at the top of your list that we haven't talked about?
Well, something really important that I'd like people to know. First of all, we have two incredible specials next year. Itzhak Perlman and Audra McDonald. And I can tell you one thing. Subscriptions went on sale on Tuesday. And general tickets, I don't think, are on sale for that season for a few months yet. But if you buy a subscription, you get first dibs on those tickets, and they go quick. As Ward mentioned the other day, when Yo-Yo Ma's tickets went on sale, they were gone in a couple weeks. So if you want to see Audra McDonald, six-time Tony winner, or the incredible Itzhak Perlman, you need to subscribe. And, you know, we have so many different things. You don't have to go on and buy one series or another. We have all these flex things. I mean, we just want you to come. We'll do anything. You can make any kind of format that you want. But if you make the commitment to us now, you have a dibs on these incredible tickets that are going to go fast. So that's a very important thing.
Do you have a list in your mind, Jeff, of things that you either haven't done in years or you've never done? And every year, that decision, I mean, it's almost like a fantasy baseball draft where you're going to have to make a call here. You've got 30 possible choices, and you can make 5. I mean, is there a list that you know you're going to do next year because you need it this year? That
well,
kind of?
I'm always on the lookout for something interesting. And to answer that question, I'll give you a very interesting answer. Somebody brought Push Theater to my attention, and I didn't know anything about them. So I went, and I looked at what they did, and I said, wow, this could be an amazing thing with orchestra. So right now we're just trying to figure. We're going to do a. I know I'm doing a concert with them a year from April, and we're
April 13th and 14th.
Yeah, and we're trying to figure out what is that going to be. What's it going to look like?
Wait, that's on the calendar, and yeah. You're not sure what that's going to
well,
be.
Well, I know that's going to be their incredible dance. I mean, you know, dance and action that they do with incredible music. But we're looking to create what I called from the 1960s, because you know I grew up. You know, I'm a little older than both of you guys. We used to call it a happening. And we're thinking about how we're going to change the setup of the orchestra, how we're going to do all these different things and create pieces for this concert. So there's a thing to answer your question where I'm always looking for something that's never been done before. And when it pops up, it's like, wow, let's embrace this idea. You know, we've had the Rochester City Ballet on stage with the orchestra. We're not in the pit. We're on stage with them. We've done that a number of times. I'd always wanted to have music and dance, and to have Jamie Leverett choreograph a number of my pieces was one of the biggest thrills of my life. I hadn't planned that, but it just kind of evolved. So I'm always open to new things and just looking out for what is something I want people to come in. One of the greatest concerts we did, we had Nexus, the percussion group, and they had a choreographer come down from Toronto and go into the inner city schools, and we had the kids make costumes, learn an African dance, and we brought this drummer from South Africa who came up. And all of a sudden, we have Nexus on stage, 100 kids from our city schools dancing and singing. I mean, I didn't know what that concert was going to be when we figured it out, but I knew it was going to be good.
Jeff, you mentioned earlier that you're getting ready to do women rock.
Yeah.
Are we eventually going to see more women conductors?
There are a number of fine women conductors. As a matter of fact, a lot of the orchestras, other orchestras where I'm principal pops conductor, Dallas in particular, they're having women associates year after year after year, developing these young women conductors. Some of the video game programs, there are young women who are really great conductors. And I think we're going to see more and more of it. And it's not going to be a novelty. They're going to be conducting not because they're a woman, but because of their merit and because of what they bring to the music. And there's many more. There are many more women who are getting involved in this, and I think it's great.
Okay. Ward, you agree?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we haven't seen as many, it's true, female conductors, but as Jeff said, they're really starting to come on the scene in a big way, and I think it's fantastic.
I want to read an email from Karen talking about access here. She says, can you ask why the RPO won't open all sets in the balcony for every show? The sound quality is much better up in the balcony, but I can only afford a $40 seat, which is now the cheapest option up there. There used to be seats in the $23 range. When I was buying a ticket at the box office for the Shostakovich concert, I also tried to buy a ticket at the box office for the Mozart Requiem concert. But when I was there, I was told the seats in the $40 section weren't available yet, so I left without buying one. It comes from Karen.
I would say call the RPO and talk to them about it. You know,
you guys may not be the best ones.
We're not really involved
in the marketing and ticket pricing and the science of all that. And you know, there are all these trends that happen in selling tickets over the years. You know, I love the balcony myself, so I understand what this person is saying. It's not the first time I've heard it, but she needs to talk to somebody down at the office who's a little more qualified than we are.
All right, so a couple more quick listener questions. John says, ask Jeff when Antonio DiPaolo is coming back.
Tonio, my great friend of almost 50 years, has retired from singing after an opera career of 40 years, and I love the guy. We did so many great concerts together, and I think his final performance was my 60th birthday concert or something like that. And he's happily playing golf, and he's out of the business. And he's making a lot of pasta.
Very good. And both of you, if you could, because again, I want to stress, I think there are 70 ticketed performances, something like that, 2017, 2018 calendar for RPO, and again, rpo.org. For that. Ward, what else is on there that we haven't hit that you're excited about? I mean, I know you're excited about everything.
Of course. And you know, I don't know how the time flies so much, so quickly, I should say, because now we have less than 4 minutes. But
less than four, you got about one.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, we have two brand new world premieres, which is a great honor for the orchestra. One oboe concerto being written for our principal oboe, Eric Baer, a harp concerto by the great Jennifer Higdon, very, very talented American female composer. Thrilled about that. We have another opera. We're doing Carmen by Bizet, which is a great opera. We're doing a week dedicated to Spanish music on the Phil series, which sort of links up with the Carmen. You know, Itzhak Perlman's coming, and so is Audra McDonald. So it's just, there's so much. It's going to be another fantastic year.
All right, Jeff Tyzek?
Magical Mystery Tour is coming in. We're going to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' White Album and Sgt. Pepper's. And also, we're doing an incredible Latin Latin concert with a soprano, Camille Zamora, classical Latin on the first half, and Rochester's own The Mambo Kings on the second half with Latin jazz and Cubano jazz. So that's going to be great. And of course, our films that we mentioned, Harry Potter and E.T., and great Audra McDonald. I mean, we have a bang up season, and our great kids or Kidstra programs, our educational programs.
Guys. So good.
Yeah, and our Sunday programs. I mean, if you can't find something, something's wrong.
Yeah. Speaking of, you know, so there's a lot on the
Four Seasons. I forgot about that.
Oh, see, look, I'm backing you up here with a little Vivaldi to close.
There's so much.
I have your
so
back.
So much.
I Thank have you. Your back. That's Jeff Tyzik, principal pops conductor for the RPO. Jeff, always great. Thank
My
you.
My pleasure.
Great fun. Ward Stair, music director. We'll see you there. Thank you, Ward.
Thank you, Evan.
And you can check out the full season. A lot coming up. RPO.org, the 2017-2018 calendar's out. Want to remind you that this afternoon, coming up in just a few minutes, Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe and U.S. President Donald Trump are holding a joint news conference following their visit at the White House. You're going to hear that via NPR News National right here at the top of the hour, and then we're right back with Connections whenever they're done. So we'll see you then.